Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Star Chambers Show, episode number 211. And this is Stephen Zimmer coming to you live out of Central Kentucky in the bunker tonight. And I'm joined tonight by two amazing co-hosts coming to you from the South, from the land of Tennessee, the one and only Daniel Dark, and from parts out west, parts unknown, the mysterious, enigmatic Tommy B. Smith. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Good to have you aboard.
Well, good to be here once again.
the excitement is palpable, but the chat room is working, folks. And it's been. And when I say bunker, I mean it because I'm in day six of my mandatory isolation, according to the health department. And yes, we even had to sign a document that if we violate said isolation, we could be, actually brought into court. So, yeah, these are serious things when you have this lovely COVID-19 diagnosis. But we're, I'm going to keep good spirits and fight through this thing. And thankfully, my symptoms remain on the mild end of the spectrum. And Holly is making progress. Can't do a show tonight, but she is making progress. Just got her sense of smell and taste back at the beginning of the week. But like I said, she's getting real frustrated because she's not the kind of person who likes to be idle. And so she's been really frustrated because, like I said, she just simply cannot, do much. I mean, it really is, it really does knock you down. So that's the way it goes, but. So guys, how is your quarantine-ish stuff going? I know, Tommy, you're doing a little work, and I know Daniel's kind of staying out of the storm right now.
Yeah. Not doing a whole lot except for trying to figure out, how to do college without an instructor, showing me what he's wanting and stuff, so that was I don't do well learning by just looking at it on the computer and saying, oh yeah, that's what he needs to do. That doesn't work well for me without instructions and stuff on what to go along with it, but I'm fighting through that anyway, so. And trying to get a little bit of writing done on top of it.
Yeah,
I don't know about Tommy.
He's
probably written about 3 books since he's been in quarantine, but
I have kept up with writing, but man, probably Tommy's the one that's been kicking butt on the writing front.
Well, I've been trying to, but, there are other responsibilities to call my attention. But, of course, the writing never stops, so I always make time, no matter how much time I actually don't have. But, the wheels are still in motion, and I was going to say around here the storm comes to you. So, you can stay home and do nothing, and you're still listening to sirens and having to take cover. But thankfully, as I said, we have the little underground bunker, and we don't have any worries about any of that, but as for the COVID-19. Oh yeah,
Tommy.
Well,
you
there's some interesting moments.
But it's not you selling couches with your cats installed, or having cars drive through your neighbors' houses, or tornadoes going right by your house. I mean, yeah, it's never a dull moment with you. That's for sure.
Yeah, sometimes it seems like a lot of work just staying alive, but
yeah,
it's a narrow bridge we walk. But we have all of our cats here. and the yep. house and everything still stands. The fortress still holding strong. So we are in a good way.
Awesome.
And you will be too in time once you get past this pesky little bug that's been pushing down on everyone. And
yeah,
Holly,
it's the real deal.
Once she recovers.
Yeah, and I want to tell people this thing's no joke. I mean, it's like I said, you know, not an enormous number of people have it percentage wise, but for those that do, this is not a good thing at all. And yeah, it's worse than a pneumonia. I mean, it's definitely a tough virus for sure. And it's then the other thing about it, it's incredibly tenacious. And the thing that I think is kind of amusing, and I mean that in a very sarcastic sense, is that, you know, you get diagnosed with a thing that's tougher than a pneumonia, and then they basically tell you, well, good luck, you're in isolation, but we have no medication or treatments to give you. Hope you make it. And then that's pretty much what they do. And then you're kind of stuck, and unless you go to DEFCON 5 and need an ambulance, you know, they tell you not to call in. So there you go. That's the treatment. So yeah, when I read reports about Israel and Brazil and all these places where, you know, allowing their populace to make avail themselves of some things that, you know, have you know, shown some signs of being effective, yeah, it's a little irritating to say the least. But it's the way it goes, man. You just have to laugh because it's you know, we're pretty much stuck with a holistic approach, you know. And so yeah, authors got to be creative, you know. And even now, oh man,
definitely. And and you and Holly actually did have some remedies. I know you've shared over
yep.
social media, and probably
yep.
some of the listeners. It wouldn't hurt to throw it out again if you feel
sure.
the urge to anything
absolutely,
that might help
absolutely.
Anyone out there.
Yeah, these are things that we use all the time for immune stuff because I haven't had health insurance for over 5 years. And Holly has stage 2 COPD, so she's vulnerable every year and has a hard time during normal flu season. So, you know, we're big on this kind of stuff anyway, like immunosupplements and things like that. And, you know, things like zinc is a big one with us. Echinacea is a big one with us. We also like elderberry supplements. We believe those have been very effective. Of course, vitamin C, simply walking outside, getting vitamin D are very good as well. And, yeah, we put together a pretty good package of stuff overall. I mean, with as far as, like, the various supplements and things that we do take, you know, kombucha is another strong one. It's, you know, you can get it in tea form, hot or cold, and it's a probiotic. And, like I said, when you got your digestive system sorted out right, it's a huge booster to your immune system. And so so those are just some of the key elements of the package that we normally take. And I honestly can tell you, I mean, I believe 100% that's the reason Holly is not in the hospital as we speak and has been able to kind of scrape through this. And I also believe it's the reason my side is on the milder end of the spectrum because all those things I think really bolster you. I also recommend just blueberries and tart cherry juice for the antioxidant properties. And if you want fun antioxidant sources, red wine and dark chocolate. So if you want a little enjoyable antioxidant source, but yeah, antioxidants anti-inflammatories have a good part to play in this as well. So those are all things that, you know, we definitely make use of. And like I said, I'm not a, you know, not here as a medical expert or anything like that. This is strictly, you know, what Holly and I do. And, you know, but I mean, it, you know, Holly's not in the hospital and my symptoms are milder. So, hey, you know, I mean, I guess that's, you know, we haven't had anything else. We sure haven't had any medications or anything like that. So, yeah, kudos to the holistic, natural side of things and immune system. Yeah, so that's pretty much it right now. But I knock on wood, and we'll get through this here in 8 days and hopefully be on the other side and get confirmed negative, and then we could at least put on our masks and go out into the plague lands again. I don't know if I'll let Holly out. Oh, man.
Oh, and I'll throw out one more, you know, to bolster the immune system. Sleep, very important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We're getting it. Yeah, because I've noticed, I've been incredibly fatigued during this period. And it could be partly because of the mental aspect. And, you know, it's just such a weird environment. I'm sure a lot of people are talking about
it. I don't doubt it.
But, it's definitely, we've definitely gotten a little extra rest. I mean, for sure. So, that's the package. But, it's been an adventure. So, but before we get too far into the show, though, I do want to recognize tonight's sponsors because they have snazzy spots, both of them. And, of course, I'm speaking of the amazing Sandy Lender, who is just an absolute angel. And, of course, Gene Rowley and Kyle Hanna of Jumpmaster Press. So we're going to come at you right now with a little from Sandy Lender.
Award-winning author Sandy Lender has a new story for Dragon aficionados. Move the Stars tells the magical tale of 16-year-old Ava Stonebreaker, finding and using her voice for the good of her world. Fanciful creatures, fairies, giant dragons, spunky shoulder dragons, and the endangered arabesque join her quest to move the stars. Check out the author page for Sandy Lender on Amazon.com to pick up a new favorite story today.
I love that spot. And Sandy does a great job with her live stream. She's doing them daily around 7 o'clock. She's been doing poetry readings for Poetry Month on her Facebook profile page. So if you're on Facebook, look up Sandy Lender about 7 o'clock-ish each day. She's doing some great live streams. And here comes the one and only Jumpmaster Press.
Attention authors, stop sending ebook readers away empty-handed. With the Jump Card ID, sell your books directly without the need for an online retailer. The Jump Card instant download exclusively from Jumpmaster Press could be your ticket to more sales, more readers, and international distribution. Find out more about the Jump Card ID today at www.jumpmasterpress.com.
Thank you, Gene and Kyle, for being just great supporters of the show. And, yeah, check out jumpmasterpress.com because, very innovative stuff for indie authors wanting to actually sell ebooks and audiobooks at conventions. But, back to you guys. And, I mentioned live streams, but I've been doing one myself daily about 4 to 4:30 right in that time zone. But there's been an explosion of them going on Facebook. And, some cool stuff, man, for sure. You have a lot of different people.
Yeah, it's definitely a good time for that. It's a good time for everyone to plug in and keep up with each other, reach out to each other a bit more. And I'm hoping, you know, that with all of this, you know, with any global catastrophe or situation along these lines, is that eventually the best that could come of it would be that it would bring people a bit closer together, you know, with all of the division and the political climate and everything else, you know. Hopefully people can start looking out for their neighbors and such a little bit better, watching out for one another. That optimally would come of this once everyone gets better, and hopefully in time the economy will heal as well. So one day we'll manage to put it behind us. Matter of getting from point A to point B.
And I know you
it's a good time for the live streams.
Because there's a lot of that going on too. Yes. Everybody's watching their neighbors.
Oh yeah.
Everybody's
that too, yes. Yes, there's a lot of watching your neighbors with guarded suspicion.
It's crazy, man.
Speaking of looking out for your neighbors, yes. Look out for your neighbors in more ways than one.
Yes.
But it's also a good time for books, though, as well. So,
yes. No, it's great. And art. And on that subject, I think our guest of the evening is on deck here. And I have known her for many years. That seems, seems like forever, you know, that I've known her. But she is an award-winning artist and just a phenomenal artist. And also a truly, truly top-level graphic designer who has done a lot of book covers. She has won major awards like Dragon Con's Warrior Art Award, and she's just one of the best people that you can possibly meet in the creative community. And I'm speaking of the one and only, the one who is most off, Bonnie Wasson. And I think she's on the phone.
Hey, hello.
There
you
she
hear
is.
Me?
I hear you.
All right, awesome. Hello. Thank
Good
you
thing.
For having me on. This is pretty awesome.
It is awesome. And, yeah, you traveled the Oregon Trail and did not get dysentery on your travel there years ago and made it there because you were now in Oregon. But it's been a while since I've gotten to see you in person, but having you tonight on the show is great. Got covered between the four of us here.
Oh, no, it was quite the trek. It was a professional move for my husband, and at that time we didn't have any children, and so it kind of made sense to kind of spread our wings and check out a different part of the country, and we love it up here. It turned out really great, and we have all the nice weather while the rest of the country is in apocalypse mode, so sorry, but not sorry.
Well, you truly did increase your numbers when you went west, because you have a little one now. That's an update.
Yeah. Yes, it's its own adventure, and being a mom is something indescribable. And we are just try every day. We learn something new and hurdle another obstacle, but it's a blessing, and our little guy is amazing. And so it's super cool.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I know Daniel and Tommy want to definitely explore a lot of topics with you tonight, for sure. Of course, I'm familiar with you because I got to, I have gotten to work with you directly on some of the book covers that we've done at Seven Star Press with R.J. Sullivan,
mm-hmm.
Chrissy Gale. You did three of her book covers. You've done three of RJ's, and then you have done at least three of mine with the Raiden Valkyrie Dark Sun Dawn saga or Dark Sun Dawn trilogy. And we've got a chance to work together quite a bit. But how would you describe your art for people that are just kind of tuning in tonight and finding out about you? How do you put it in your words?
I lean a lot towards kind of the digital aspect of things. It's just a little easier on materials, and a lot these days with portable tablets and things, it's really like an amazing tool. My style has been described as, well, kind of Valkyrie. A lot of like warrior, fantastic, fantasy, sci-fi, kind of in those genres. Crazy as it is, being a freelancer, sometimes your style doesn't. You're doing artwork for someone else, and so you're bringing their ideas to the forefront and bringing them to fruition. So when anyone asks, like, well, what's do you have any personal art? And I'm like, I really don't, because it's so wide open how you decide what to do. So it's something I constantly work on, and constantly try to improve on. And, you just have a whole bunch of ideas in your head, and whenever you have a few minutes, you just kind of jot them down, and sometimes a piece comes out, and sometimes it's just relaxation. And I'm very fortunate and grateful for all the freelance orders and jobs that come my way.
Well, I want to definitely counter you a little bit on that, because like in the case of the Raid Valkyrie covers, like I said, yes, I mean that is an existing character, and there there's some specifics about it from the book. Obviously, she's. Mm-hmm. Blonde haired kind of Norse like warrior, and she, uses both an axe and a sword. So, there's a few key details that are in the book. But by and large, I mean, like I said, you know, and this is something I'm very careful to do when I work with you, but turning you loose and having the Bonnie Watson interpretation of that character. So, you gave it, you know, the Bonnie Watson interpretation, and it became, it's definitely your style, your art, and you made that character come alive. And it's, maybe it's not, I guess a from scratch original per se, but I mean, yeah, you definitely, that is your interpretation. You definitely weren't micromanaged on those. So.
Well, there was something magical that happened when we were working on those in the early days and really coming up with a concept. And a lot of it does come from the source material. You especially, you know, you bring out and give a lot of background and context to how the character is built. And I have to admit, when I was first working on that first, I tried a lot of iterations. And thank goodness I was working in Photoshop because I just dumped layers, you know, like, oh, it's not going to work. And it came down to, as it usually does, the very last kind of design idea that hit me like 3:30 in the morning. I remember it was just an ungodly hour in the night. I just finished my third wind and I'm like, oh, I've got to nail this down. And I did a quick color wash and a quick sketch. And I was like, what if I just do a profile? A profile is like a super strong concept. So let's just try it. And from there, I think we really hit it, and it turned out really, really special. I think we were very, very proud of that, and it was just amazing. I'm so fortunate to be able to be at the kind of cornerstone there to launch a creative look for Raiden.
Oh yeah. Definitely set the tone, and I will, you know, like I said, these three covers, I just absolutely love. And your thing is, I'm a huge Thomas Kincaid fan. I love the use of light in Thomas Kincaid painting. And one thing I noticed just as an amateur lover of art, I'm not a professional, but is you really are also really top notch when it comes to light integration in your artwork, and you see little real subtle touches of light reflection, things like that I always see that in your artwork. And is that a conscious thing you set out to develop? Is it something you just developed as you went along, or is that, you know, because that is part of your style, and I just want to hear you talk about your use of light.
That's a great observation. I don't think it started out early on as I was kind of developing skill and things like that. The more I studied like the Caravaggio and kind of the Renaissance, especially Baroque, I wasn't a huge art history buff because it was just so boring in college. Those were the kind of the things that I would gravitate towards, this dramatic use of light and the way that it adds so much depth than just kind of flat color, and it adds so much atmosphere. And over the years, I've really kind of honed in on different types of light usage just because it seems to convey so much more than minute details sometimes. And if you can just get a highlight or a little, lens flare, J.J. Abrams, or something, I think it just really adds, you know, a different attitude, easily.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's really hard to use. Light is finicky and interdimensional, in my opinion, and so it's been an ongoing practice and ongoing observation in just real life, real world. You know, I'll see reflection somewhere on a walk or out my window or something. I'm like, oh, that's sweet. file it for later. I'll use it in, you know, a future piece or something.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fun to see because you had been in mom world for a little bit when my third book came up, and so that was a chance for you to kind of get back into the thick of the art side a little bit when Shadows Fall came out, and yeah. I mean, you really see it with the reflection off the sword onto Raiden's face in that one. I mean, that just subtle, cool little touch of light. And I think, you know, it's a perfect example of that signature of yours and just worked beautifully on that cover. And so it's really cool. And boy, you knocked it out of the park because you won. You took the accolades for best warrior art at Dragon Con, which is no small feat, because that's a huge convention with tons of artists. And I want to tell that whole story because, man, that's a big prize. That's a good one.
Dragon Con has been near and dear to me for several years. My sister moved down to outside the Atlanta area a few years back. Right out of college, and so she started raising a family there, and her in-laws were huge con goers, and they would go to Dragon Con. So they invited me down one year, and I just fell in love with it. It's just an overarching convention that has everything, movies, literature, robotics, gaming, everything, and it was so all-encompassing and just everything that I love, all in one place, and so they have an artist alley, and the first time I walked through there, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. You had people like Donato, I can't remember his last name. Ugh, I'm horrible with artist names, I'm sorry. It's horrible, I'm on the spot. But just artists that you always grew up looking at, and on the comic book covers and art books and just illustrations and games, and you're right there right next to the artist and their pieces that you've seen in a million different publications, it's there right there in front of your eyes, and it was mind-blowing to me. And so I'm like, you know what, I'm going to participate in this art show one day. And so I think it was a couple years later after my initial attendance, and I filled out all the forms and submitted my submissions and everything and got the acceptance. I was like, oh, this is so awesome. Now how am I going to get my art from, well, then I was in Kentucky down to Atlanta, so that took some logistics, but I did it and hung, I was like 5 or 6 pieces or something like that, and was able to sell 4 or 5 of those, and it was like the greatest thing. They're probably way underpriced, and that's probably why someone got like a huge deal because I didn't know what I was doing. So I participated in that for a few years, and when I started working for 7 Star, I did a cover with, ironically, a sword and reflection, and the artists that attend, they have you get a form in your packet, and it's a survey, and you go around all the booths and everything, and you vote for your favorite warrior, favorite dragon, best fight scene, or anything like that, and we turn them all in, and towards the end of the con, all those are tallied up, and they give out awards. And that year, I was lucky enough to be awarded the best warrior, and it was super awesome. Yeah.
Yes,
very
it
nice.
Was. Let's get Tommy and Daniel in the conversation a little bit. They both might want to pick your brain a little bit about design and things like that, because they both have some pretty snazzy design covers themselves. But yeah, jump in, guys.
Well,
go for it, Tommy.
I'd say there's longstanding adage, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. But I mean, let's be honest, everyone does. So that is the first thing everyone sees when they look at a book.
Yeah.
So that is very, very important. So it's very important to have an artist, you know, who suits what you're trying to deliver. And was, as you were saying, getting a good idea of the source material. But I wonder, have you ever taken on a project that perhaps you found more challenging than some of the others? For its direction.
I have. It wasn't an illustration. It was like a logo design. And it was a little difficult because I was trying to take the elements and the request from the client, and I was like, okay, I'm going to – it was a whole lot, and so you kind of had to, like, square peg round hole it. And you know, and as an artist, you're thinking about visual. You're thinking about it's going on different marketing materials eventually. And you're just thinking about all these things, like how does it look small? How does it look big? You know, is it going to go on color? Is it going to stay on white? And so you're trying to design one element that goes across the board. And so I came up with an iteration and submitted it, and, you know, and the client just was not happy, and they wanted it to look a certain way, and against all of my professional experience, you know, I was like, okay, I'll do it. And that, at that point, you just kind of let it go. You're just like, all right, you know, I still want to get paid for this project, and right now I did my best as far as professional advice, but now it's time just to roll with what they want. And even if you don't want to put your name to it because you're like, I can't believe what I did that, you know, it's just something that you kind of have to let go. It's just kind of part of the freelance world. Sometimes some of them hit it off, like with Steven and the Seven Star covers, and sometimes you don't, and you just have to kind of separate yourself and be like, all right, it's just a job. Now it's not about, like, the passion so much. It's just about, you know, making the customer happy and then hopefully, you know, getting some compensation for it. So
yeah, some people do know specifically what they want, and they want you to do it probably exactly the way they say. And sort of like Steven, though, I always appreciate the artist's rendition, basically their own reflection of what I've done is always interesting to me. So
yeah,
I think it's important to allow the artist a bit of leeway to work their own magic.
Oh, absolutely. And you don't want to stray too far. Like, it's very symbiotic, you know. And sometimes finding that sweet spot can be hard, but 99% of the time it's great because you have a skill that your client doesn't, and vice versa. Like, if you ask – I love to read, but putting together a novel just blows my mind. Like, I wouldn't even know where to start. So just recognizing and respecting and just loving everybody's talent is what really brings the project together. And I think you see that in a lot of the book covers, you know, just this love. And, you've got wonderful stories, and you've got wonderful covers to illustrate that, and I think it really shows the Seven Star. So,
oh, absolutely. Go ahead, Tommy. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, when a person picks up a book, there are actually probably a number of people who have gone to work on that book, and and all of that is important from start to finish. But yeah, the cover art is the first thing that people see, and it's that first impression, often, which can make or break whether the person picks the book up in the first place.
Oh. Right. Oh, I totally agree. But it's also the insides. I mean, that's a lot of passion and hard work that goes into that, and I love that. And I think that's what makes books so special, because it's just a collaboration of great artists. So.
Absolutely.
Have you ever read a book after you've done the artwork for it and said, well, I wish I'd never put my artwork on that?
No, I really haven't. And, you know, it's sometimes it's hard to really kind of keep up. If you're busy and you're kind of churning out a few book covers, it's hard to read them all as you're doing it. So, you know, as hard as it is to say, I a lot of times I don't get to finish a book or even start it sometimes just because of the time. But I haven't run into any project that I really regretted or wish I didn't keep it out of the portfolio.
Oh, that's good. Thank God.
Stephen's like, don't say my name, don't say my name.
Oh, man. Dodged the bullet there. All right. I made it. But what I was going to say, though, earlier was that I think that every press or self-published author or anybody that's working with a freelance artist, I do think, and I will say this, is it's good advice not to micromanage them. Give them room to breathe. You're going to get a better piece of art if you allow the artist to bring their skill set to the table, their vision to the table within, you know, the parameters of what the project has in it. But yeah, don't micromanage. I see that happening sometimes where get driven absolutely insane by just absolute nitpicking sometimes by people that hire them to do covers or whatever. I think it's important to just give them some room to breathe. Yeah, give them the key elements, you know, and if like there's something glaring at odds with what's in the book, yes, I get that. But give your artist room to breathe, and I guarantee you every single time you're going to get a better cover, get better piece. Bar none.
So don't do like I do and just be on them, be on them, be on them.
No. There is far worse, Daniel. Trust me. But Bonnie, comment on that and tell me if I'm crazy or if I make sense there.
No, I think again, it's a very you've got to find the balance because you know you're creating something based on the heart and passion of another artist. And you can't tell me that you write a book and you don't see exactly what everything looks like, you know. And then, you know, an artist comes in and you have the same elements, but it just doesn't have the same feel sometimes. Like, I totally think direction is very good, but I think it's more collaborative and not necessarily, like, nitpicky or checking certain boxes. I think it's very fluid and you know, you both want to make something that you can be proud of. And so I think there's a lot of give and take. And I think with like the initial design, you know, I think it's really broad. I try to, whenever I'm doing a project for you, here's kind of the rough and just kind of the feel that I'm thinking. And, you know, and then I send that off and then we can collaborate back and forth. I think what some mistakes happen is an artist will just go full out and have it like 80% done and then submit for review. And, you know, the author is like, that's when the conversation gets hard because, you know, the artist has already put in these hours, and then all of a sudden you got to, like, redo a big chunk of it because you weren't on the same page. And I'm a real firm believer in steps and processes, you know, kind of going in along the way. Sometimes you nail it, and sometimes, you know, you got to work together a little bit. And, again, different artists have different steps or processes that they do, and I'm not the end-all be-all. It's just kind of how it works for me. And over the years, I think my process has changed a little. You know, you start out running and gunning as a young artist. You know, like, I rule the world. People are going to bend down to my, you know, to my ways, and it really doesn't work like that. Yeah.
All right. Let's see here. I just had the call screen because we actually do have a caller that wants to say maybe a few comments and talk to Bonnie here. We'll get this caller on in just a second here.
Okay.
But Daniel, do you have anything you want to cover right at the moment with Bonnie?
You talking to us or you talking to her?
Oh, you, Daniel.
Oh.
Yeah, coming from.
Yes, one of the things that I have to question and everything, as a cover artist, comes down to design. When you have a customer that knows exactly what they want, how do you change what they want to what they need?
Sometimes they kind of precarious, but I think if you back it up with kind of explanation, they're like, here, instead of just throwing, it's like, well, this is what you need. This is really how it works. You know, trust me, I'm a professional. That's not really the approach I feel is successful. I would sometimes, you know, just call them up and be like, hey, listen, I know that you feel that it needs to go in this direction for one way or another or whatever. Here's my recommendation and my advice. And, you know, sometimes just clarifying it and be like, oh, that's why you made that decision. Well, that makes so much. I didn't think about that before. Or it's like, oh, I didn't get that perspective, or I didn't see it that way at first. That totally makes sense. I get it. You know, roll with your way. Sometimes it doesn't happen, and you're like, okay, I'll do it this way. And you just kind of have to bite the bullet and do what they want. You know, black text on a black background. That's what they want. Okay.
That's what Tommy would want. You got to see his photographs. And...
yeah,
but
that would,
you know,
work out perfectly.
Just...
So, yeah, a black cat
trapped
in a black room.
Yeah.
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 With the title in black as well.
Yeah, you know, because it's a dark novel. Get it? I mean, I'm teased.
Yes.
but I just I feel just a little explanation goes a long way, and there may be a reason they want it that way. It's like, well, I was really going for this, and it's something that I always do with my books. You know, if I'm not familiar with them, and you know, it's a conversation, and I think it all goes back to collaboration. So.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I'm going to bring aboard a caller here real quick. And this is Clayton Barnett.
Okay.
A very distinguished fellow and a very good author in his own right. And I've had the privilege to work with as an editor. And Clayton is back online. And, yeah, so I'll let him address you with whatever question, comment he is on.
Greetings, Bonnie. How are you this evening?
Hello, Clayton.
I tried to text in a message, but for some reason couldn't log in. But one of the things Stephen said is what I've experienced before working with cover illustrators. I mostly work with people on 99 designs, and I've tried just shoving a few basic ideas under their nose and hoping for the best. But I really enjoyed what you said, that you've got to come back over and over and over and make it a reiterative process. And as a result of that, I've got spectacular results from that. I think you're completely right.
Oh, fabulous. Fabulous. Well, thank you for that.
Thank you. I looked at some of your works online at 7-star because I would like to have a single artist do my upcoming Crusade trilogy. It looks
nice.
As if you're more focused for the, I would call it the fantasy side more than the science fiction side. Is that how you would define your works?
Yes, definitely tend to lean more towards the fantasy. I do love sci-fi, and I try to implement some of it, but I'm not very good at mechanicals, you know, trying to build a ship, more kind of character-driven and a little bit more atmospheric these days. But, yeah, you're right.
Well,
my focus does kind of lean towards fantasy.
Okay. Well, even then, again, I'm always looking for another source. As I said, I've used 99 Designs, but I've also, for two of my book covers of 10, reached out to one of our fellow people on gab.com, and that relationship for various reasons fell apart. But Stephen, you, of course, have copy edited Princess Crusade, and you know for a fact this is not sort of Niven Pornell hard sci-fi. It's taking place in a semi-dystopian America. Do you think that Bonnie, do you think I should try reaching out to her and getting some conceptual sketches?
No, you should reach out to Bonnie. Absolutely. I can recommend her more. As far as how talented she is. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, that would be fantastic. And we can open a dialogue and just kind of see where we're at. Stephen, do I just, we'll just exchange emails through you, or how do you want it?
I'll facilitate that because I do know Clayton, so I will make sure he gets all the info, or I'll just connect you guys directly there. No worries. No worries.
All right, fabulous.
That sounds fine. Again, while unlike everyone else who's been hunkering down in this completely fictional panic, I work at a hospital, so my day job is still active, but I've got enough time. I've been able to lay down another 10,000 words in the last 4 days, and so Empress Crusade is coming right along, and I've got some ideas about the third of the three of the trilogy. So, once you have the opportunity, no hurry, obviously, just send me an email and I'll contact Bonnie through that. And if it works out, fantastic. And otherwise, we shall see. A pleasure.
All right.
To meet
All right.
you. Good evening.
All right. Thank you, Clayton.
Take care, Clayton.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Absolutely.
Thanks for calling. Oh, that's a good call. How about that, Bonnie?
Yeah.
That's what we do with the Star Chamber show. We get these clients on the air.
Excellent. Clayton, this is how things get done.
That's awesome.
Yeah, his material is superb, though. I edited his latest work, and he's a top-notch writer with some really meaty material for visuals. And I think you'd have a lot of fun, definitely with it. So good luck on that. But that, hey, productive call there. As Sandy Leonard.
You never know.
So I'm going to take this conversation toward both of Tommy's latest novel, Anybody Want to Play War, and Daniel's Victim's Tale. Both have a very design cover element, in terms of look and stuff. And I want to bring this part of your world into it. You're a graphic designer as well as an artist illustrator. And you can have great illustrations, but unless you have an eye for design, it's not necessarily going to work as well on a book cover because of font choice, text layout, all those kind of things. How's it gonna look? Sandy mentioned this. How's it going to look in various sizes, thumbnail size, this, that? Let's open up a little bit to the design side of things. And this will be an area I think Tommy and Dana could definitely jump in on with you and talk about the design aspect with books and so forth.
You're right, Stephen. Combining both of those really are the recipe for a successful cover. You can, draw and paint all you want, but, if you can't fit the title – or, make the title as enticing as the visuals, I feel it's an incomplete design, and a lot of it is based on composition, the weight of your design. And I think for me personally, thinking about all that stuff from the very beginning, like you have to really plan for the end game. Sometimes it always happens. Sometimes in my head I was like, oh, this is great. You know, the figure goes here, the background fades out there, the text, boom, boom, boom. And then when you get kind of into the project, you're like, oh, that's not going to work at all, you know, and you kind of have to rearrange. But selecting the correct or the best topography that goes on there, and it's all about having everything visual, because if you can't see it, it really doesn't do anything, especially on like a bookshelf or, you know, these days little thumbnails on Amazon or online shopping and all those e-stores. And I get emails from Amazon like all the time, and I just sit there and look at the book covers, kind of the trends, what's going on. And, you know, these days it's really simple illustration in the back, and then you have bold, like sans serif topography that is kind of weaved in and out, and, you know, and it's a trend, and, you know, a lot of people like it, and it's really modern looking. But if you see all those things all together, you're like, everybody's like, you know, going to the same bar, they're all drinking the same thing. And part of the challenge is to, you know, sometimes make it, you know, kind of pioneer possibly a new trend, or just kind of feel what the illustration or even the source material is kind of telling. You know, it's kind of a, I did one, it was R.J. Sullivan's, Haunted Obsession, is that what is it?
Yeah, Haunted Obsession, yeah, that was back in the park.
Yeah. That was another one that I really felt kind of got into a groove, and that was, I thought, one of my best pieces as far as I felt like completion and concept. But, you know, it's got a real vintage feel, you know, kind of a retro atmosphere, and so you have to kind of match those titles to go along with it, but also have it readable. Some of those fancy decorative fonts, you know, are just too curlicue, have too much filigree, and you can't read it. And if you have to squint to read a book title, I don't think you did a good job, with a design piece. But it's puzzle pieces, and I think you just kind of feel it out. But I think design's a huge part of it.
Yeah. Most definitely. Chime in there, Daniel. I know you have thoughts on this.
A lot of things that I've seen out there recently, and, you know, one of them is having the author's name bigger than the title.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I sort of understand it with a Stephen King or, you know, Clive Cussler or somebody like that. But, the average person doing that is saying, look at me, don't look at my book. It is what it's saying to me. And I want your opinion on that type of stuff, too.
I think it goes to really kind of what the author kind of feels what their piece needs to be, what it means to them. And I don't know if I really have an opinion either or. I mean, it does. You have it bigger than the title of the book. It's kind of like, well, it's me. You know it's going to be good, you know. And I think some of that can be should be approached with trepidation. I like a nice title, you know, and I think the title is also part of the illustration. Like, I think it it needs to be inclusive and it's part of the piece. But again, you know, if Steven's really proud of his next one and he wants his name, like, big ass on there, then he gets his name big ass on there.
What I'm talking about on one of them that I looked at, you know, when it first came out, I saw the book on, it had, if I didn't know who the author was, I wouldn't know who the author was because mm-hmm. the title was a person's name and the book and the author's name, and the author's name was actually bigger than the title, so you thought it was, you know, this was the title by this person, and then you sit and you look at it, it's like, no, that's an author up there. I know that name.
I think the weight of the visuals, again, it's all composition and balance. And I think maybe notoriety plays a lot into it, too. You know, you have a Tom Clancy, you know what you're going to get, right? But, you know, for most of us, the 99% of us that are in it for our passion and want to spread our love and creativity, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know if I really have a strong opinion either way.
Well, it's like Victims Tell, my last one that came out. My name and the title are both basically the same size, but they're, you know what the title is, and you know it's got you know by so and so on the front of it.
Yeah.
You know, that is you know perfectly acceptable to me, but you know, like say, unless it's you know one of the huge authors that everybody in the world basically knows, you know. Just Joe Schmo down the street and everything, puts out his book and everything. His name's, you know, like three-quarters of the book cover, and then, you know.
Joe Schmo, yeah, picks up half the book, and then.
I also, with topography, I think it's also a way you've got to be able to distinguish that. So, I think if you kind of stick to fundamentals, like you have your title in a strong serif, and then you have your author and all the bylines in, you know, a sans serif, but it matches, it kind of goes together. I think you can be able to accomplish that. You can have it bigger or smaller, but there's a definite separation between the two. Like, you can convey what the title is, and you can convey who the author is. And if you can do that the same size, that's awesome, you know. And, you know, there's also design elements, not necessarily illustration. You know, there's blocks, there's color differentiation, you know, there's composition and spacing and alignment. It all goes into that. And it's just a matter of figuring it out, I think.
So the problem that I see with it is the young authors coming up that they don't know anything except for what they see on the bookshelves. And they see that and they say, mm-hmm. oh, that's the way you're supposed to do it now because that's the mm-hmm. new trend coming out. Well, that's, you know, that's fine for that person to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know. Until you get to that level where you're selling a million books of every book that you put out on the shelf.
Yeah.
You know,
like Tommy.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, I think it
can be eye-catching. Well, not everybody can be Tommy, you know.
Right.
I think it can be eye-catching to do something creative with it. And I was just now looking at your cover art for Haunting Obsession by R.J. Sullivan, since you had mentioned that one, Bonnie, and seeing how this is – the title here is laid out with actually the R.J. Sullivan is up here at the top, and then you have Haunting Obsession in bold in the mm-hmm. positioning so that you actually have a better view of the spectral form here to the right of it, and mm-hmm. then a small tagline under the title, which is a little bit that strays a bit from the norm, but mm-hmm. but you know it's done in an effective fashion. so that it showcases the artwork probably to its best visibility.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And I repositioned that text a gazillion times before I landed. So you usually just kind of see the in piece and not all the undos that I did, or, you know, an accidental save over. But I think, you know, each piece can be organic, and you kind of go with the flow with it. Sometimes it'll fight it, and you kind of get frustrated, and you just kind of just step away and then come back to it and just be like, all right, you know, how's it feel? What's it telling me? And, you know, it all goes together. It's all kind of mixed into the same process.
What is the percentage of your books that you do by hand and do by computer graphics?
It's 100% computer graphics.
100%?
It was kind of a choice in art school. I was a poor art student, and it was really hard to afford materials. And so I think some of my best sketches were on computer paper. That was crap, but I knew I had a ton of it, so I didn't have to worry about messing it up. And again, this is just my personal thing. I love traditional art pieces. And I've tried to do a few of my own. I gravitate mostly for graphite sketches and a little bit of gouache and watercolor. But to me, to be most effective and time efficient, I do the digital. It allows me to really experiment with color, texture, light, and without having to really concentrate. I'm not very good at the meticulous planning like a traditional art piece would. You know, I'm not good at that yet. I think it's a lifetime of practice. And kudos to anybody who can do all those oil paintings and watercolors traditionally. And, oh, they're just amazing. But I'm not that good. So the digital medium really just gives me confidence. And it was something that I kind of taught myself. And it just worked out to be the best medium for me.
Okay.
And
sorry, Steve.
Well, oh, no problem. But you did bring up cool mention that relates to comments that Sandy Leonard made in the chat room. And you said, of course, you brought up titles with a good serif font, and then looking at the rest of the wording with the sans serif. And, you know, of course, that's, you know, referencing font styles. And like Sandy says, she obsesses over, and that is an important part, choice. And there's literally tens of thousands of fonts now to choose from. I mean, new ones are being designed constantly. And it might be fun to comment a little bit on your approach as a designer to fonts, how you even begin to go about that when there's literally tens of thousands of choices when it comes to fonts.
Good question. So what narrows it down significantly for me is I go and find all the commercial-free fonts. Just do that first. You're not paying, you know, all those royalty fees and not having to pay licenses for usage and things like that. And that narrows the field down extremely. And then I do just kind of a Google search on font pairings. Sometimes I'm not a super awesome grandmaster at font picking, but it helps to kind of see what, you know, again, what's trending. It's kind of a big thing, and just topography wise, what really looks good together, and it's really kind of piggybacking on other people's knowledge and other artists. It's like, well, here's this block, slab, really huge, heavy, meaty font, you know, and it looks really good with a script, you know, as subtext or subtitle or something. And a lot of that is just really experimental, and you just kind of go through sometimes. I just sit there and scroll through my font list, and I was like, this is so crazy. I'm just going to stick with a font that works. I have kind of a library of, I don't know, 150, 200 fonts that are kind of my go-to, and if you kind of use them in different aspects or on different projects, you know, and they just work. They're kind of your go-to. And you know, sometimes you're going through those font lists and the only word that looks good in that font is the word sample, and then you're not really using a good font. Which I see a lot, you know, and it looks really good, or the font name. It looks great in the font name. You try to do a title with it or a word, you're like, this is horrible. This is crazy. So yeah, a lot of it's treasure hunting. For me, I just kind of over the years have built kind of a hardy library of fonts that just really stand the test of time.
Okay, you have a question from the chat room, Bonnie. Sandy asks, what is your personal favorite font for an author name for a back cover marketing? So two questions.
Okay.
You have a favorite?
Okay. Hey, Sandy. That's a really good question. Again, I think it really kind of depends on what the cover artwork is going to look like. And for the marketing blurb text, I usually keep it with a serif that's really clean, because usually those paragraphs can get kind of small, and they're usually like on a dark color background. So there's like a lot of ink buildup, which might be another conversation, building stuff that works with print. And so I like to really keep with the serifs on the back. And oh, she said something about genre dependent too. Yeah, that makes sense. I don't know if I have a favorite. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I don't mean to disappoint you.
No, you don't have one.
I do have, like, one of my favorite sans serifs is like Open Sans. I think it's commercial free. There's a whole lot of styles that go with it. Italic, extra bold. You know, you're not having to make an italic by like slanting it. It's got pretty good range, and you know, you can build a whole document out of it and out of the same font, and it looks like it has a lot of variety and stuff. So that's kind of my sans serif go-to, my Open Sans. Title cover, I think it's however it kind of feels. You know, I did RJ Sullivan again. He's getting a lot of airtime. About pirates.
Yes,
and so,
hey,
you know,
hey, world.
Haunting Blue, I think it was, or something. And, you know, it's pirates. So you kind of have to do some artistic pirate stuff that's readable. You know, and on Steven, on your Heart of a Lion, what font is that? I can't remember. It might be. What'd she say in there in the chat? I don't know. It may be Palatino. She may have called it on me. Just a real regal serif that, you know, just conveys a royalty or a kind of strength. And then a script, you know, kind of a scripty font for your name. So, you know, it's just kind of how it works out. So,
Very cool. Very cool. And it's a complex world if you're a newbie to the world of fonts, because I mean, there's just so many of them, and where do you start? What do you do? And it's
mm-hmm.
definitely a world in its own right.
It's amazing. But you know, if you're in a commercial print and these things are going out for print for people, you know, you're selling. You know, you really have to, as you know, you have to really concentrate on licenses, which is something that it took me a little while to understand. And so that's why I just straight up go commercial free, and I don't have to worry about it. It's done. It's free. I can use it a million times, and it can print, and you know, and all that good stuff.
Yeah, and there's a lot of sites now that have quite a selection of commercial free, free fonts and things like that that have cropped up around the internet, like defont.com being one of them. And,
yeah,
quite a few. You can browse that, find a lot of good stuff, and you're not the only one. I mean, like Engar does the same approach as you, uses a lot of that, and just keep it simple, because you can rack up a real fast if you have to pay all the license.
Yeah, you know, some of those fancy fonts aren't full fonts, you know, they don't have like special characters, so sometimes you run into that, you're like, oh, this is so awesome, but it doesn't have an apostrophe, you know, and it really you know, screws you over. I think that's part of the planning too. You kind of you just want to eliminate as many variables as you can from the get-go, and then whenever you run into an issue or a problem, you solve it, you know, as it comes up. And then, you know, prints is a whole different thing. You know, you got to color builds and things like that. It all plays in, you know, as far as like designs. Outside of freelancing, I work as a graphic designer in the print industry, and what I really have come to learn is I wish artists going through art school and they're all their fancy critiques and stuff would learn the print side too, because if you can't print it, then, as far as like commercial, not really like fine art that is meant for painting and stuff like that, but stuff that's going into the print world, like if it doesn't print, then you need to go back to the drawing table, you know. And I think print really sifts through some of this stuff and really makes you learn and makes you a better graphic designer, because you know it works, you know. And it's all that good stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Tommy, what are your thoughts on that? The crazy world of fonts and design.
Well, yeah. Yes, I agree. There are a lot of fonts. I mean, there's just a vast multiverse of fonts all over the place. You know, even just when I have to use them, and I don't even use them for, you know, for that.
mm-hmm.
Even just
right.
using them in a limited capacity, there's a lot to just to. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I feel your pain, but your pain is greater than mine if you're doing that and trying to match fonts to with cover art and the like.
Well,
but
I'm looking here at my desk, and I've probably got the things that are sitting on my desk that have writing on them. I've probably got 30 different fonts on my desk right now.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. Yeah. I think Tommy's approach of black fonts on black backgrounds could really simplify things, though, Bonnie.
Well, see, I actually did that on business cards at one time. I had my comic book store. I had Sandman Comics, and I put black gloss ink on black cards.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, real, like, kind of like, progressive modern art, you know, gray on gray, gray square on gray square.
Yeah, we got to redo the Kenny Wayne Shepherd song, Blue on Black for Tommy, with Black on Black. We have a new full song, Tommy, a reverb. So, but if you look at the chat room, Tommy's avatar, he lives up to the moniker here because he's a black square. His avatar is literally a black square. So it's perfect.
Oh, and like I said, we go with black type on black background. I mean, we can even play around with fonts such as Wingdings or whatever else, you know. We can get really creative then.
Yeah, well, I don't have to worry about them not working.
Yeah, we'll use Wingdings in the next project, black font on black. Good plan, Tommy. That's awesome, man. Oh, Lord, Lord.
Wingding killer.
Now, getting back... I will steer this a little bit to the creative again, because one project you did with us, you really did get to kind of spread your wings without almost – didn't have any parameters at all. It was just a call for some genre illustration work in science fiction and fantasy, which that worked out pretty cool because, it was a freelance project, but it was one where you almost had no parameters whatsoever. So –
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
You and Matt.
Submitted. Yeah, me and Matt. I think we had, like, two pieces of our own, and we collaborated on one or something. So both of those pieces. One of the pieces, I think Amethyst was the one with the dragon rider and kind of the purple motif. That was a sketch that I had done in college like a million years ago, and it just sat in my sketchbook. And I was, when that opportunity came along, I was like, sweet, it finally found purpose. Yeah, which is pretty neat. And so I think I had just had the bust of the dragon rider like sketched out. Everything else was original to that piece, but yeah, it's kind of funny how some of that stuff just comes full circle. It was just kind of a throwaway sketch. I had a few minutes left in an art class or something and just kind of doodled it out and just kind of kept it for a few years, and boom, you know, it found its life. And then I can't remember what it's called. It was a little upside down dragon with the bird. And so that was just, I was obviously on a dragon kick, and, you know, I just had some ideas on a little bit of juxtaposition and size and species, up, down, direction, and so I tried out. So that was just something that kind of came out and was really fun to do.
Yeah, that was a neat project, too, because, and I know Daniel and Tommy are probably familiar with it, but that was with Michael Notched, where he corralled, you know, all the authors you may never have heard of, like Neil Gaiman, and it's a phenomenal book.
Yes,
just a great book on writing in the genre. But it's that was cool, and the way that it worked out, because it was a chance for you guys to Matt Perry and yourself to actually get to do artwork that just had to be in the genre, but it could be anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, so literally there was, that was a case where you could freelance but have something original, which is a cool
rarity in some
ways, you know. So, yeah, that was neat, I think. And like to see Michael do one of those again at some point.
No, that'd be cool. And kind of like I said earlier, it was a little harder just because it could be anything. Like, there were no parameters. And I'm like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I can't decide on anything.
So much freedom. Yeah.
It's so much freedom. It's kind of a weird aspect of freelancing, but I got through it. I think it worked it out. I think it's good.
Yeah, that was a great project. To this day, I mean, that book continues to get great reviews, helping writers, and I mean, it just continues to happen. I mean, yeah, it's never ebbed. I mean, it's a good one.
Great. That's great. Yeah, that was super cool.
Yeah, Mr. Nost tends to put together some pretty good books on writing, that's for sure.
he seems to be you need to put a bug in his ear and have him do it again.
Yeah. And Tommy just mentioned the chat room, the other one. Tommy, go ahead and talk about it, because it's another gem by Michael, which I think needs a shout-out.
Oh, yes, Writer's Workshop of Horror. Yeah, that was, I think, the first time I actually met Michael Nost. He signed that one for me. But, yeah, that's got some awesome creators, you know, in the horror genre, giving their spill on what works and what doesn't. And really, it's just, and of course, everyone is different, but there really is, there's a lot of wisdom and knowledge throughout its pages. So yeah, Michael Nost is put together some excellent, you know, books on writing. It occupies a space up there with some of my others, such as Strunk and White, The Elements of Style, and others, you know, that are very useful books for any author. So yeah, check it out.
Yeah, quick
that
shout out.
I like that. Yeah,
with Tim Wagner, called The Art of Genre Writing, where Michael Nost and Tim Wagner alternate chapters, and it's just been released in the last year. But that's another gem for those of you listening for writing books. But yeah, back to Bonnie. Yeah, that was a great project, and I hope we do get to do one of those again. But
yeah.
What are
go ahead.
You were doing. You were like I said, you were in mom world for a while, and I was you know, obviously that's priority. What is going to be your focus area, like as far as your art going forward in the coming year to 2 years? Do you have like a you know, kind of a focus area now, or what's coming up for you?
To be honest, I really don't know. You know, being a parent, it, you know, sucks a lot of that creative energy out, and not because of that. It's just you're using, you know, using your brain for something totally different. I don't know. I always had, I don't know. I always wanted to try Inktober, right? Those little things that the artist kind of around the interwebs do just ink drawings every day in Inktober. And just being able to focus and do a project like that month long each day, it would be like a crazy awesome accomplishment for me. But what I find is my life is, as crazy as it is, it's still a little fluid. And so I just try to kind of do little doodles here and there. I've started using the Adobe Fresco software, which is pretty awesome on an iPad, to emulate oil painting and watercolor pretty good. It's definitely got aspects and attributes that are outside of just the Photoshop. But, you know, I feel that I've got a whole future in front of me, and whenever I get my she shed, I think I'll really concentrate on being a real artist. No, I'm just, right now I'm just pretty content with, doing, projects here and there and just being a mom, you know, and, yeah. I don't really have any concrete plans because as soon as I make them, I have to break them. So.
Well, you mentioned iPads. What recommendations what is your gear that you use for as far as digital pads? Is it just the iPad, or do you have other digital sketch pads? What is your main software and hardware right now?
Okay. So for my big freelance illustrating projects, like book covers and stuff, I run a Wacom Cintiq 22 HD, I think. And so it's kind of one of those bigger desktop tablets that has kind of the touch interface. I like that. And then I paint through Photoshop. Sometimes before Photoshop had some of these new updates, like mirror drawing, kind of where you draw on one side, it mirrors on the other. like little things that Adobe would steal from like SketchBook Pro and all that stuff. But yeah, Photoshop's my main thing for the digital painting, of course, Illustrator and InDesign for the graphic design. As far as tablets, I have an iPad Pro and with an Apple Pencil, and I use Procreate and, as I said earlier, Adobe Fresco that just came out. So,
very cool.
Yeah, and there's all sorts of options, budget options all the way up to, big time professional, and you know, I think it just all depends on your budget and the you know, your style or what you think you need and all that kind of jazz. I don't think one's better than the other. You know, it's Apple PC. Apple is super pricey and pretty, but, you know, Windows runs stuff so much better. So, you know, it's give or take. You just kind of have to feel out whatever works for you. But, yeah, that's what I'm running right now. So,
awesome. And we're coming up in about 3.5 minutes in the show, so I wanted to give you a chance to tell people how to follow you, find you, if there's any key sites online that channel fans or potential clients do. This is your chance.
As I said earlier, I'm really, you know, I have strong concentration on family right now, but and I don't have a huge social media presence. But I do have like a DeviantArt account that I have to spend some time updating. But I'm on Facebook. You can send me a Facebook request. I guess just Bonnie Wasson. And do I just say my email address, or is it how do I do it?
however you wish for people to find you. I mean, if maybe the DeviantArt page, if you want to spell that out.
Yeah, that might be. Let's see. I don't know if I have it handy. I can't remember. It's been a while. Mainly, it's a lot of my artwork is on Seven Star Press, so you can just look me up there. I guess it's kind of word of mouth. I like I said, I'm not a huge self-promoter. That may change like in the years ahead, but right now it's just trying to keep a little boy happy and healthy and not crying.
So, if you need to get in touch with Bonnie, you can get in touch with me, and you know, I'm always on social
media. Yeah,
there
you go. Yeah,
contact me.
Steven will make sure I get the message and we can go from there. Yeah,
I put up with that necessary evil social media, so yeah, get a hold of me.
Kudos to you. I have had the option to like steer clear.
Fortunate, it's a good thing. It drives me crazy sometimes. But we got about a minute and a half left, so anything you would like to say to round out, and then I'll let Tommy and Daniel take us out on the show here.
Okay. Well, I would like to thank you guys for having me on, and I don't know why it took me so long to find my way here, but I'm glad I did. And Seven Star Press is an amazing family to be part of. And so thank you, Stephen, Tommy, and Daniel. And it's nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Good to meet you.
And so
thank you.
Yeah, glad to be a part of it.
Well, you're the best, Bonnie. You're the awesome Watson. That's all I always call you. All right. Well, Tommy and Daniel, I guess I'll wrap her up, I guess, here.
All right. Good night, friends and fiends. Until the next.
And if you heard something inspirational tonight or new knowledge, you'll hear even more next week. Shall we talk again? Be creative.